Welcome to this week's edition of World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley in Washington, D.C. This is our post-Thanksgiving show. It's the Thanksgiving, the long Thanksgiving weekend. Normally, we would be taping this on the so-called Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, but because of the vicissitudes of production, we're taping it actually on the evening of Tuesday, the 25th of November. So please don't imagine that we can know everything, although we have actually been pretty good, as we'll see. But what I would point to is we don't know what has actually happened in the latter part of this week, right? There's a bigger interval between our taping and the actual broadcast. So let us now begin. The question of the fall of Secretary of Defense Hagel. And here is our conclusion to begin with, and then we'll give you the motivation. The most prominently named candidate to replace Hagel at the Pentagon is a certain Michel Flournoy, F-L-O-U-R-N-O-Y. Stop this nomination. Vote no. If you're in the Senate, vote no. If you have a senator, and everybody has two, especially the ones on the Senate Armed Services Committee, the answer to Michel Flournoy wanting to take over the Pentagon is no, no, no. She is a warmonger. She is a mask of General David Petraeus, General John Allen, and their warmonger clique. No. This woman is not qualified. She would be Rumsfeld in a skirt, but even worse, because the strings would be pulled, in this case, by the Bonapartist and enemy of democracy, General David Petraeus. Remember General Petraeus? Remember you guys from MoveOn.org? Well, this is General Petraeus coming back with a vengeance. And we'll describe this in a second. The news, as you know, is that as of last week, Secretary of Defense Hagel, appearing with a Band-Aid on his face next to General Dempsey at the House Armed Services Committee, Secretary Hagel was an opponent of the strategy of bombing Assad and essentially taking the heat off ISIS. That is the policy that Michel Flournoy would be coming in with. Michel Flournoy would be squishy soft on the terrorists from ISIS and Nusra and Al-Qaeda, and she'd be hard as nails on the Assad regime. She's incompetent. She's a fool from this point of view, strategically. And you'll remember all of that blather that we've covered over the last two programs. You heard it first here, that allegedly, while Obama was out of the country, there was going to be a policy review. And in that policy review, the necessity was to bomb Assad. And, of course, that would mean fewer resources to throw at ISIS and Nusra and the Islamic State and all the rest of these terrorist crazies. Remember what Hagel had said. That ISIL is an immediate threat. And dealing with Assad, where we are now, that's not going to put ISIL back in the box. ISIS, ISIL, interchangeable. You know this drill by now. So remember what he said. The line coming from the warmonger group, and we'll see who they are, was that Assad is a magnet for terrorism. Yeah, he's a magnet because he's been targeted by Qatar, by Turkey, by Saudi, by NATO intelligence, and other pro-terrorist forces. You remember what Hagel had said. There is no change. There is no different direction. We could change Assad today, and that's not going to change all the dynamics. This is from a secret testimony, according to an insider account. Who are you going to replace Assad with? What kind of an army can take on ISIL? according to the AL Monitor and CNN. Now, remember that Hegel had sent a memo to Rice. This is now Susan Rice, the head of the National Security Council. I cringe in saying this, but that's her. And there was a big attempt to give out false leaks, to distort, to completely reverse the content of that critical memo from Hegel to Rice. I think what Hegel was saying is, you got to make up your mind. If you want to fight ISIL, you got to essentially accept the fact that you're working with Assad. And she can't do it, because the career of Susan Rice and the career of Samantha Power and not a few of these others is based on humanitarian bombing. If you take away the call to overthrow Assad and Putin, of course, but for the moment it's the Middle East, we think, we hope, if you're going to put out calls to overthrow Assad, that's the essence of the Samantha Power, Susan Rice position. If they're told, zip it and clobber ISIS, then their whole humanitarian bomber dimension, their whole Soros dimension goes out the window. They can't take it. So what has been going on then is simply to pretend that you can do both. And my estimate is that the Hegel memo of late October to Susan Rice was something like that. You've got to decide which it is. You can't have both, and you better support Assad, because ISIS is by far the larger threat. Here we go. Here's a commentary. Let's see if we can cite this for you. this is some kind of a, I think he's a libertarian. Anyway, Daniel McAdams, Hegel out, Assad next. This was obvious. You can see my tweets. I'm sure I beat him to the punch. Hegel's fate was sealed in early October when it was reported that he sent a memo to Rice. We want that memo, by the way. We want that memo leaked. Hey, Cryptome. Hey, WikiLeaks. Hey, anybody. Get us that Hegel to Rice memo and we'll begin to know more. But in this case, it's described as expressing concern over the Syria policy, especially the policy towards Assad had become incomprehensible. Unable to back down from the humanitarian interventionist demands that Assad must go, the administration simply pretended that Assad and his army on the ground fighting Al-Qaeda and ISIS did not exist. Instead, the policy appeared to be one of fighting ISIS and Assad, the enemy of ISIS, at the same time, while all the while training yet another tranche of moderate rebels who would presumably fight both ISIS and Assad. And it's absolutely ridiculous. So that's why he was out. We're also told Hegel didn't get along well with Rice and Samantha Power. Well, here it is. They're humanitarian bombers, and along with many, right? The Pentagon is full of contempt for Samantha Power, right? Loopy, loony, right? Humanitarian bomber. It just doesn't work. There were attempts to mediate this with Rice and McDonough. And notice, this all comes shortly after the arrival of General Allen. We have been pointing to Marine Corps General Allen, the disgraced General Allen of Jill Kelly fame, of November 2012 fame, all those emails to that Lebanese socialite woman. Who in God's name is she? And why is she getting hundreds and thousands of emails from General Allen? He's disgraced. How does that guy still have a security clearance? He and Petraeus should have been deprived of their security clearances long ago because of their philandering and God knows what else. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Topley in Washington, D.C. Remember to keep up with my work. Go to Topley.net, Topley.net, all the radio, TV, books, articles, other appearances, Twitter feed, it's all there. And let me repeat, for the first time on this program, we are attempting to organize a weekend course, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, in the political economy of the American system. That is to say, philosophical, epistemological, method, and economics. This is for the heavy hitters. This is for the long ball hitters. This is for the serious people who want to become revolutionary leaders. There's no other way to put it in today's terms. It's most likely, not 100% guaranteed, but very likely to be on that weekend. I believe it's the 12th, 13th, and 14th of December. And here in Washington, D.C., and if you're interested, go to the Speakers Bureau, Speakers Bureau feature on my website, tarpley.net. Send me an email. There's a contact box there. You don't need to worry about the email address. Just send it to me. If you're interested in coming to this cadre school, 12th, 13th, 14th, and again, it will require effort. It will require some reading in advance. If you want to start reading in advance, get a hold of Surviving the Cataclysm, Your Guide to the Worst Financial Crisis in American History. There's a 1999 edition. Better is the 2009 post-panic, post-world derivatives panic, edition. So we'll be, looking forward to that, and we'll have more details the next time around. What we're trying to do now is to essentially assess the degree of interest. So, short course, political economy of the American system, Washington, D.C., 12th, 13th, 14th, December. Send it to me. Send your contact info to me, and I'll get back to you. Now, remember, when did all this start? We had, and we've written about it and talked about it, newspaper reports in I guess it was April, saying that Skull and Bones Kerry and Samantha Power, the humanitarian bomber, were interested in attacking the Assad regime. Obama had said no several times, right? Notably the previous August, September, with the fake, staged, hooked up, false flag, chemical weapons incident. And that Kerry and Samantha were reaching out for help from leading warmongers. And there were three. There was General Allen, General Petraeus, and General Keane, all part of a warmonger clique, all associated with the neocons. But now we've got to be a bit more specific. We will not do anymore to talk only about neocons. We have to talk about Allen. Here's what the Washington Post says about it today, Tuesday, November 25th. The administration officials had leaked that Hagel had written a tough memo to National Security Advisor Rice, blasting the White House strategy for Syria. They don't tell you why. It's because Rice wants to bomb Assad. The squabble came 1 month after Obama appointed a retired general, John R. Allen. John R. Allen, if you don't know who he is, take a look at my website. There's a picture of him up there with his girlfriend, Jill Kelly, and his right-hand running dog, McGurk. John R. Allen, his envoy in charge of assembling a coalition against the Islamic State. Appointing Allen, according to the Washington Post, was a job that some Pentagon officials saw as diminishing Hagel's role. Yeah, sure, of course. The ISIS czar. ISIS czar Allen has been working and scheming as per that plan, which goes back to April, which was in the newspapers. I think it was the Wall Street Journal. We'll check it. You can find it on toply.net. And the idea was, we've got to bomb Assad. That's their Johnny OneNote. So there's all this stuff about White House micromanagement and so forth. This may have some validity, but this is not the main thing. And you followed with us, again, I have to claim the best place to follow all this was precisely tarpley.net. So here we had, in the November 15th edition, we had, post-election war coup. GOP Chairman Ed Royce of the House Foreign Affairs Committee touts policy review on Syria. In reality, a cover for the latest Kerry Allen McCain effort to bomb Assad and save ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Bid comes with Obama overseas. Pentagon Chief Hagel, NSC's Ben Rhodes, counter that ISIS first is still U.S. policy. So the idea is there were the people who wanted to have the policy review and bomb Syria, and then there was Hagel who said, no, ISIS first. And we quoted, that's the quote we gave you before. And then just this past week, November 22nd, Obama repudiates the Alan Gates Petraeus Kerry campaign to spare ISIS and bomb Assad. Pressure mounting on Turkey's Erdogan to slam terrorists. Well, it's never linear. So this is a reverse. This is bad. Hagel should have hung on. Hagel should not have quit. Obama, of course, is a fool. Obama he lurches from something mildly promising like immigration now to this. And of course the neocons had been the entire Bergdahl affair, the raving, foaming attacks on Obama over Bergdahl, I think had something to do with the desire to hit, Hegel. And, Hegel is now, out. Now, who's gonna be in? Here's where we gotta mobilize. We're dealing, first of all, with Obama's Brisbane no. Brisbane. The Brisbane no was, are you planning a strategy that will overthrow Assad? The answer from Obama was no. The Washington Post, as we heard last week, Washington Post editorial page went ballistic. They want such plans. But now who's mentioned in this town, meaning in the oligarchy? Here we have Washington Post of today. Top contenders to replace Hegel. Michel Flournoy. She's got an accent grave over the first E. She's Michelle in the French style. Accent grave over the E. Remember, W.C. Fields would have done something with that. Michel Flournoy, F-L-O-U-R-N-O-Y. Undersecretary of Defense from 09 to 12, under Gates and Panetta. Her rap is, she's viewed by some in the White House, and this, whoever the anti-war or anti-lunacy faction is, if there is one, in the White House, too uncritically supportive of the uniformed military's agenda. Now, when they say uniformed military, dear friends, that is a euphemism for such militarists as General Petraeus and General Allen. These two disgraced generals who we still find with security clearances planning new wars. And it all revolves around something called CNAS. Back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Topley in Washington, D.C. So now, with Hegel going down, and he needed to stand up, obviously, and denounce the faction that got rid of him. These people never do. They're cowards. We know that. But Michel Flournoy, her story is too uncritically supportive of the uniformed military's perspective. Translated into good American, she's a stooge for Petraeus, Allen, and that clique. And she comes from the Center for a New American Security. Now, this center, you're going to have to add this to your list, right? You all know the Project for the New American Century. You all know about Brookings and the Institute for the Study of War with the Kagans. Here's another one. It's called the Center for a New American Security. And the trick with this one is, this is the Petraeus think tank, the main Bonapartist, golpista, putschist threat to the United States, has his own think tank. And I'm wondering whether the money came from Henry Kravis of Kohlberg Kravis Roberts, known to be the general's money bags as he marches, he thinks, towards power. The CNAS, it was very big in the surge. We focused on the Kagans, right? Kim Kagan and Frederick Kagan. But we've also got Andrew Exum of the Center for a New American Security, who was part of the Petraeus McChrystal civilian board that included the Kagans, Biddle of the CFR, Cordesman of CSIS, but also CNAS. Meanwhile, by late 2009, we read in an article online, think tanks like CNAS had begun holding a series of events featuring military brass discussing the counterinsurgency campaign. September 2009, CNAS scholars joined General Petraeus at a National Press Club event on counterinsurgency, leadership in Afghanistan, Iraq, and beyond. And, of course, if you go to the CNAS webpage, or even if you go to the Wikipedia page, it's actually perhaps even clearer. It's clearer there than on their own page, because they do hide it a little bit. Here's what you find. Center for a New American Security. Well, there's a picture. Who's the picture? General David Petraeus delivers the keynote address at CNAS annual conference. It was founded in 2007 as a vehicle for Petraeus, public policy think tank, and it was founded by Madame Michelle Flournoy, the coming aspirant now to be the head of the Pentagon. And in the quotes up here in the top of the Wikipedia article, we get something from James Steinberg. Speaking at the CNAS annual conference in June 2009, U.S. Central Command Commander General David Petraeus observed that CNAS has in a few years established itself as a true force in think tank and policy making circles. Petraeus equals CNAS equals Flournoy. Allen, the ISIS czar, is operating on the inside, and Petraeus, with the help, I'm sure, of Kravis, is operating on the outside. A couple of more words on CNAS. General Allen is a part of it. Joe Lieberman, Richard Armitage from the State Department, right? The mud, blood, and beer expert from the Iran-Contra period. Michael O'Hanlon, warmonger. Oh, Marie-Louise Slaughter of the Slaughter Doctrine, right? The one who wanted to bomb, she said, attack Syria, bomb Syria as a means of getting at Putin. Madeleine Albright, obviously several million Iraqi children are worth, it's worth killing them to get democracy, William Perry, and others. So, General Petraeus is a frequent guest at their meeting. So now we have these two disgraced generals. The comparison comes to mind is General Boulanger of France, right? The putschist, the coup guy, who failed, lost his nerve, and he was found weeping on the grave of his mistress. So you would think that they might have brought in the Institute for the Study of War with the Kagans. That would have been too much. So here we have an extreme warmonger group, but it has a certain amount of democratic representation. We can call it the extreme democratic right-wing warmonger group. Concerning Michelle Flournoy herself, we can assume and we know that in the councils of the Obama White House, she was constantly a voice for escalation, bombing, wider wars. She's a hawk. Think about Hillary Clinton, right? This seems to be the unfortunate pathology of women who get into these positions. They feel that if they're not the biggest warmonger in the room, they're going to be accused of weakness, feminine problems, whatever you want. Now, this is very bad. Obama should never have accepted. You should have rejected the resignation. And we don't know what happened, right? The stories we are told here in the Washington Post, it's all based on anonymous leakers. For example, I could never tell what Hagel's opinion was on anything, said a senior administration official involved in national security policy. Who's that? Susan Rice? Anthony Blinken? Who is it? Rhodes? I don't think Rhodes seemed to go with Hagel in the last exchange. So we don't know any of that, but we do know that this charming lady is a warmonger from CNAS. Hagel, for his part, I could compare him to Marshal Pétain in 1917. He took a defeated army and he tried to improve their morale with some creature comforts. A little bit of housing, a little bit of care, a little bit of, in the case of Pétain, a little bit better wine, what have you. That's Hagel. But now the warmongers are counterattacking. So here's what it's going to be. There has to be a confirmation hearing for Flournoy. That means the Senate Armed Services Committee. If they do that in January, which they may, That will then be run by McCain. So that will become a monstrous orgy, festival of warmongers that will be bashing whoever it is. If it's Flournoy, they'll bash her and they'll say, promise us that you won't be a softy like Hegel, that we want to escalate, attack, and go to the brink, and roll back, and all the rest. This is actually quite tragic. The role of Susan Rice in this, well, we can assume it's bad. But I think, again, the main way to look at it is Allen on the inside, the ISIS czar, and Petraeus on the outside, with help from these useful idiots from the various Kerrys, Rice, and so forth, right? And remember that Petraeus is a bid for Bonapartist power, for the man on horseback, remember, and we may be headed, in this direction. And as far as what motivates Obama, well, last week, a couple of days ago, we had the story on November 17th. It was a woman with a 9mm pistol in a holster walking around the White House just as Obama was delivering the immigration speech. That would have been the evening of November 17th. We now have, on the 24th of November, a certain R.J. Kapheim, K-A-P-H-E-I-M, who was found near the White House with a rifle, ammunition, and a big hunting knife in his car. And he's on his way to 2 years in the cooler for bringing those illegal weapons into the District of Columbia. And that, of course, was the same day that Coburn had talked about anarchy and violence in his commentary on the Obama immigration speech. So, doesn't look good. And remember, the 9mm woman, of course, seemed to be from the same neck of the woods as Joni Ernst. And now we got another guy from Iowa. The Iowa school is coming to town to answer the Brisbane. No. Back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio, our post-Thanksgiving weekend program. Now, Moscow must see what has now happened. This is a step in the wrong direction, right? This is like, we can compare it to a number of things, but the fall of Hegel is not without severe international repercussions. The coming of the warmonger Flournoy. Oh, and by the way, it's not like she's the only candidate, right? She's the leading candidate. There's also another guy called Robert Work, deputy defense secretary. He's the number two to Hegel, retired Marine colonel. Well, guess what? He's also from the Center for a New American Security. So Work also served as chief executive of Center for the New American Security before the Senate confirmed him in April. He's blunt. He's the Pentagon number two. He has had a major role in the Defense Department budget and a series of other things. He's the chairman of the Nuclear Deterrent Enterprise Review Group, with all those guys getting drunk in those nuclear missile silos. I guess that's not so good. We're also told Ashton Carter, but it's clear that Ashton Carter is only in there, as I think Work is too, but Ashton Carter especially, to make it less obvious that this is going to be controlled by the Center for the New American Security, meaning Petraeus, Allen, and their disgraced group of drunks and womanizers, which is also what they are, right? Check out the covers on the various books about these guys, right? With 45 automatic and a glass of scotch. All right, so here we are in late imperialism, that's for sure. Now, what does Moscow see? They're aware. Putin says Russia must prevent a color revolution. This is actually from Thursday of last week in Moscow. Russia has to prevent a color revolution. I welcome this. If you look at my book, Obama, the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate, you will see right there that the whole point is the color revolution, right? That Obama is going to bring color revolutions, and there's extensive documentation in there. If you have friends in Russia, send them a copy of Obama, the Postmodern Coup. Get one for yourself. The Making of a Manchurian Candidate. Here's what Putin says. In the modern world, extremism is being used as a geopolitical instrument and for remaking spheres of influence. We see what tragic consequences the wave of so-called color revolutions led to. For us, this is a lesson and a warning. We should do everything necessary so that nothing similar ever happens in Russia. Yes, bravo. The whole point is, color revolutions are designed to destroy the modern state. We here on this program celebrate the achievements and the unrealized potential of the modern state, founded, or the pilot project whereof was founded when Dante Alighieri got to Milan just about this time of year, December 1310, and with the help of the Emperor Henry of Luxembourg, Holy Roman Emperor, put a Visconti on the ducal throne of Milan. And from that Visconti comes the modern state. John Galeazzo Visconti, late 1300s in particular. So this is a good warning from Putin. Extremist ideology is gaining momentum in the virtual sphere through which extremist organizations are trying to recruit followers, and it must be prevented and combated. And, of course, it's ISIS. Libya is now a failed state. Syria has been ravaged and decimated. Egypt has righted itself momentarily, and I hope permanently, with General Sisi, because that's the tradition. Egypt needs a strong government. Nasser showed the way. You need new Nassers, and the U.S. will always be opposed to that, right? Ambassador Patterson was kicked out for supporting the Muslim Brotherhood. So that's Putin. And then even more specific, within a day or two after that, Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, accused the West of seeking regime change in Russia. This was the Saturday, the 22nd of November. Lavrov accused the West of trying to use sanctions imposed on Moscow in the Ukraine crisis to seek regime change. Well, it's clear. That's what they do in Iran. That's what they do in Russia. Quote, as for the concept behind the use of coercive measures, the West is making it clear it does not want to force Russia to change policy only, but wants to secure regime change. Quote, public figures in Western countries say there is a need to impose sanctions that will destroy the economy and cause public protests, a destabilization. So there's a 1-2 punch from Moscow against the destabilizers and the enemies of the modern state. Libertarians, the only thing one can fault is then if you want to maintain your own modern state, and you have every right, then don't foment other forces in the West, the libertarian Poles, for example, that pretend to represent some kind of alternative. And we're just noting then in passing that little Rand Paul is now supporting an effort to pass a declaration of war for Syria and Iraq. One thinks it's going together with this coup attempt, right? Everybody in Washington knows that this putsch is going on, led by ISIS czar Allen, and that that's the movement. So everybody now seems to think, if that's the train that's leaving the station, I got to jump on that train. Little Rand jumps on by offering to whatever threadbare, tattered credibility he has, to say, I'll support a declaration of war provided there's a time limit. But it would be, it seems to me, a step towards bombing Assad. All right, so there we are. Erdogan. Erdogan, to see what kind of a despicable individual Erdogan is, Erdogan has now joined the Larry Summers School. Women are inferior, says Erdogan. Women are inferior, and they should realize that the Islamic faith relegates them to an inferior position. Well, I'm sorry. That's not the way. Let me just point out that when Plato talked about philosopher kings in the Republic, he included philosopher queens, that women were seen as equal in their potential to carry out these affairs of state. And we're also noting that in Eastern Europe, there's now a pro-Putin sphere emerging, right? Orban of Hungary and the president of the Czech Republic these days. Both of them are quite friendly to Putin, so much so that the Anglo-Americans are trying to stage destabilization rockets in the Czech Republic over this. Now, we also ought to catch up a little bit on the Iranian nuclear question. This is now adjourned for another 7 months. We are always of the opinion that Jar Jar is better than War War, as that British naval person put it. Jar Jar is better than World War, at least in this case. With ISIS, not. But here it is, totally different. And we have to remember, Iran has the right to a full nuclear fuel cycle, and that sanctions, economic warfare should be abandoned. They are harming Europe. If you embargo, if you sanction Russia and Iran, and you're in Europe, you've already hurt yourself mightily. I would look at this list of the people who participated in these last talks, and I see the presence of Catherine Ashton, that ignominious dumb cow, whose term is over. She's out. She's no longer the European Union policy boss. That is now Mogherini, and Mogherini is much more promising. I would say to Obama and even to Kerry, why not? If you, for your own political needs, which I think are quite acute, if you really are focused on a deal with Iran, get Ashton out of there. Out with Ashton. Bring in Mogherini. She's going to be more reasonable and play it that way. So, Hegel, of course, was the first and only enlisted combat soldier to ever to the top of the Pentagon. That's got to count for something. Susan Rice's battles. Susan Rice has fought many a battle, but we can't describe them in a family-oriented program like this one. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is our post-Thanksgiving program. We are recording, however, on Tuesday the 25th. Of November. Now we want to get an update here on the situation with the Pinckney persecution. I just want to mention one or two things about Whirlpool Corporation, who own this company town. If you know the trademarks Amana, Kenmore, Maytag, Bauknecht, KitchenAid, Crosley, Admiral, any of those, that's all Whirlpool. They are the biggest appliance manufacturer in the world, having passed Electrolux of Sweden. This is huge. $20 billion a year in sales, 70,000 workers. All of this to persecute a fighting spiritual leader like Reverend Pinckney, who's trying to stop this community from being crushed and exploited. Welcome, Reverend Pinckney.
Oh, thank you so much, Russell, for having me on. And I tell you, you said the right word. The 70,000 people that works at Whirlpool Corporation, more than 4,000 work here in the city of Benton Harbor, and less than 0.5% live in Benton Harbor.
And all of that, you know, as if that weren't enough, right? The Upton family, Fred Upton, we got Kate Upton. We'll hear more about her, I'm sure, in the coming days. And they've got to have a company town, and they want to crush all political opposition. And the political opposition is you. And therefore, the frame-up, the railroad says on the 15th of December, you will be. But there is counter-motion in the world. Please tell us about it.
Absolutely. We are working fast right now to get some things done to file this motion inside the courtroom to stop the whole proceeding on December the 15th. It's going to be a little difficult because they got their mind made up that they're going to send me to jail for the rest of my life. And here's the thing. The sheriff of the county, Paul Bailey, was at a Republican meeting. I believe it was two Saturdays ago. And he told the crowd, they gave him 15 minutes to speak all about Reverend Pinckney. Nobody ever gets 15 minutes at this day. You get 5, get 10 minutes, but they gave him 15 minutes to talk about the conviction. He told them that they had convicted Reverend Pinckney, and they gave him a standing ovation, a full house. Then he told them that his plan is to send me to jail for the rest of my natural life. He said that everything is already processed. And they gave him another standing ovation. And he was just telling them that Reverend Pinckney, we got him, and we're not going to let him loose this time. So it goes on and on and on about the conviction itself. We know that they had no evidence. We know that I did nothing wrong. We know that they didn't have any witnesses. We know all these important things. But here in America, you don't need evidence to send a Reverend Pinckney to jail.
So this is a lynch mob, and the sheriff joins the lynch mob, and that is, I think, a colorable basis under federal law that this was to deprive you of your civil rights. Now, what exactly was the nature of this meeting, and where was it? Do we know that? Is that like the county Republican Party?
It was a Republican meeting. They usually have a monthly meeting once a month, and they had it at this school. And where all members of the Republican Party normally come, and they decide what they're going to do. Fred Upton usually be there. You have John Prose, the state senator. You have Albert Choker, the one who wrote the emergency manager bill. He usually be there. And you have the clerk, Sharon Tyler. She normally be there. And strictly Republicans. And there was a couple of people from the Tea Party that was there, and these people said that when they mentioned my name, when he got up there, he mentioned my name first, and when he said that he had convicted Reverend Pinckney, they gave him a standing ovation. They applauded, and then finally he said that we're going to send him to jail for the rest of his life, and they gave him another standing ovation. It's one of those Republican meetings that nobody will believe, and I'm working on it. Just as you and I talked about, I will have the documents tomorrow, and I'm going to fax them to you, so you'll see exactly what I was talking about.
Okay, and let me ask you, do we know if Congressman Upton, the state senator, and this guy Choker, were they in fact present? Do we know that?
I'm positive that John Prose and Albert Choker was there. I'm not quite sure about Fred Upton. I'm not really positive. So I can't say he was there, but he's normally at those meetings.
So the state senator and the guy who wrote the emergency manager law, state legislators,
right,
I guess, they were there. Whoa.
They were there. And the sheriff was there. Even the prosecutor comes to some of the meetings, but the guy told me that he wasn't there because I was hoping he was there. But unfortunately, I don't believe he was. He's going to give me a list of people who was there that he can remember. And
great.
My thing is this. Let's bring them all in and put them on the stand, see what they know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a federal case right there. As far as I can see, that's a federal you can't have a lynch mob and then say that was a fair trial, because that's a lynch mob. Reverend, we have limited time. Tell us how people can send you money, because obviously the big thing involved here is money for legal representation, money for a transcript, right? If you want to have an appeal option, you need that.
Absolutely. They can go to bhbanco.org. I have a PayPal right there, bhbanco.org. Or they can mail a check to Banco, 1940 Union Avenue, Benton Harbor, Michigan, 49022. That's Banco, B-A-N-C-O, 1940 Union Avenue, Benton Harbor, Michigan, 49022. Or you can call me at 269-925-0001. But I prefer if you go to my website at bhbanco.org. We have a PayPal there. And we need funds as fast as we can get them, because we're two and a half to 3 weeks away from the 15th of December, and we don't want to go in there without the resources we need to fight, because we are battling. And I want to thank Webster Tartley for all his wonderful work. I love you, Webster, and
thank you, Reverend.
You are a tremendous guy, and I love you.
Well, thank you. This is what we all owe to the cause of freedom, I guess, right? Because that applies to all of us, right? If political opposition can be simply railroaded, framed up, and jailed, then none of us is safe. And the thing that strikes me very much is this whirlpool, right? Benton Harbor, company town, run by super rich blue bloods with this multinational corporate empire. And they think that they can crush any opposition, and this cannot be allowed to stand.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Webster, those of out there, please encourage them to send money, because we have to have funds in order to continue this battle. And remember, you can go to bhbanco.org. It's crucial that we get the funds to fight these people, because remember, they're blue blood. These are millionaires over and over and over again. And this is what we're up against. It's us against them, the rich against the poor, the haves against the have-nots. That's the battle what we're fighting right now, Webster, and we're going to win this battle. We're not shedding up. We're going to win this battle. We're going to fight this battle until we win this battle. And I'm excited, I tell you, because I can see it coming, Webster, until we can make some history and we get the people from all around the world to join in and fight this battle and get to those embassies and tell them, hey, you said that this was the land of the free and the home of the brave. And only in America, you know, justice is nowhere else in the world but in America, according to the Americans here.
Absolutely right. Reverend, happy Thanksgiving. We'll see you next, and we'll be in touch. See you soon. And we'll be back in just a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio, Webster Tarpley in Washington, D.C. Now, we will be publishing some very interesting research about Whirlpool. As I say, if you think it's a Manna or Maytag or Kenmore, some Kenmore anyway, Bauknecht, KitchenAid, Crosley, an older brand, right? Used to have a Crosley radio. Admiral, also an appliance brand. Those all have been bought up by Whirlpool. They used to be RCA Whirlpool, right? They had their logo at the top of Rockefeller Center. And then around that, I want to thank Kyle McCarthy for valuable research in this regard. And if you want to see some of Kyle McCarthy's research, please come to tarpley.net in the coming days. But between the Twitter feed and the actual website, we'll try to post some of this. It's also something called the Cornerstone Alliance. That's another part of it. And the Upton Foundation. So between Whirlpool Corporation, Cornerstone Alliance, Upton Foundation, the congressman is Upton, and then the cousin is from Chesapeake Energy with the highest inflated corporate paycheck, golden parachute, in recent memory. That is the thing that runs this town. It's a company town. We have to remember this. And they are, at least claim to be blue blood, right? Vulgar and lacking in culture, as they obviously seem, right? Hooliganish, as their culture appears to be. Their Whirlpool has exceeded Electrolux as the biggest appliance company in the world. And then that brings us to the question of Kate Upton. Stay tuned to your social media. In the coming days, you're likely to find some interesting analysis about, you've heard of MK Ultra, right? What do you think MK Ultra is? Well, they use psychosexual brainwashing, and Kate Upton is certainly a tool of psychosexual brainwashing. The other thing is, let's suppose you're an anarcho-syndicalist out there. I know there are some. I don't agree with you, but remember your friends at Mondragon, right? The famous self-managed Spanish corporation, right? Well, their appliance division, Fagor, as we reported, Fagor has been driven out of business. So Mondragon is weakened, and the entire anarcho-syndicalist argument is weakened. Hey, anarcho-syndicalists, if you don't like that, you know who bankrupted Fagor? It was Whirlpool, we're guessing here. In this international competitive situation, because they have the biggest share of the world appliance market. So there we go with that. Now, let's switch. We'll keep in domestic politics a little while longer. We have the Ferguson events, and we have the death here of former District of Columbia Mayor Marion Barry. And let me say a couple of words about this. First of all, for Ferguson, I would say, and this would have applied to the Trayvon Martin case also. It's understandable that it's in some ways it's imperative that people will protest. And the one thing I would say, the one thing I would add or change in what has been done is get some economic demands. Go beyond the narrow boundaries of these outrageous cases and raise economic demands, how the situation of the black community, poor people, Hispanics, and others can be improved, and Wall Street has to pay for it. In other words, ways to shift wealth, Wall Street, and into these communities that actually need it, and shift the tax burden back into Wall Street. If we had had 30 million jobs from the nationalized Fed, plus, I would say now, another 5 to 10 million, looking more at the depth of this problem, you're going to need certainly 5 million summer jobs of the WPA type, of people who are otherwise going to have a hard time getting hired. And that's got to be the government. In other words, 30 million you're going to finance on your 0% long-term Fed credit, building infrastructure and any tangible physical production. But also, and this is what I think the Conyers bill represents, is that there are some people who don't have the skills. They don't have experience. They can't be readily integrated even into construction jobs. So for them, there's got to be between 5 and 10 million summer jobs. If you raise these demands, you have something of permanent value. Suppose Zimmerman had been found guilty and put to death. Suppose Wilson found guilty, put to death. Now, Mayor Marion Barry, I met him once at the National Airport, and I also appeared once on a local television broadcast here in Washington, D.C., where I defended him. Remember that Marion Barry was entrapped. Marion Barry was hated by the white establishment here in Washington, D.C. He was hated by Kay Graham, Catherine Graham of the Washington Post, by that entire family, and by the business establishment. And the reason, I think, ultimately was this. Marion Barry went to business leaders and he said, guess what, boys? You are going to provide a paid summer job to any teenager who wants one. White, black, anyone. Any teenager who wants a job is going to get one, and you're going to provide the jobs. They never forgave him. They hated him. All these people today, hypocrites, crocodile tears, it's all ridiculous. And the response then of the D.C. establishment and beyond was to create a Get Barry task force in the Department of Justice. And we've seen it. We've seen this same thing before, right? There's a Get Spitzer task force that brought him down and so forth. Get Barry task force entrapped him with a sex operative and some, I guess, crack cocaine. But that was not the reason. The reason was that he was providing these jobs. And you have to remember, the FBI has a program, the infamous Frumenschen, primitive men, so-called, right, going back to J. Edgar Hoover, racist. The Frumenschen said that any black elected official will be targeted. Any of them, and this started with Martin Luther King, and it's gone on to the present day, irrespective of the merits, whether they're good, bad, or indifferent, anybody black is targeted. And then we have the example, Bill Cosby. Well, what's with Bill Cosby? He is now accused of all sorts of things. A lot of it may be true. I don't know. What I do know is that most of this stuff is 20, 30, 40 years in the past. One woman has come forward. She said, why? It was in 1965 that guy came after me. Well, I have to ask, why now? What's going on? This guy's not at the top of his career. He doesn't have a weekly sitcom. It looks to me like this is Operation Frumenschen, the systematic attack and discrediting of any black official person who's famous. I would also say that the attack on Cosby is in some way an attack on Obama. Try that. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome to our third segment of the second hour here. It's a Thanksgiving edition of World Crisis Radio, and happy Thanksgiving, belated to all. You'll be hearing this on the Saturday after Black Friday, and then from there on. Remember, an economy, if 70% of your economy is consumer goods, you're in big trouble. You better have it the other way around. You better have 70% capital goods and 30% consumer goods, with that 30% giving you a much higher standard of living than what you've got here. But think of it. If it were hunting and gathering, There, it's 100% consumer goods. There's nothing else. There's only hunting and gathering. So we're in the Depression. Now, let's look at the situation. Last week, we talked about this worldwide frisson about how everybody's afraid of deflation. And, well, it might be. I tried without success to find an article from the Washington Post, as I recall, from about 1988, 1989, after the big crash of 1987, about deflation. And the way it works is this: if you see prices begin to fall, and if key purchasing managers begin to think, well, I really need some of this stuff, but I think I'm going to postpone the purchase until next week or next month or next quarter or next semester or next year, you gradually go into a slowdown. And it's not exactly a panic, but it turns to panic when people realize what is happening. That is to say, stagflation, deflation, you're not likely to find any pure model of these things, but deflation can slow an economy very, very markedly. You can make an argument that the Japanese zombie banks post-1994, 1995 are certainly an example of that, and that the entire world is now threatened by this. Let me also warn everybody, for your own good, if we go into deflation, the most dangerous thing to have is death. Read about it in Surviving the Cataclysm. And again, if you want to keep up with my courses, you better get yourself a copy of Surviving the Cataclysm, Your Guide Through the Worst Financial Crisis in Human History. If you have debt, then under deflationary conditions, that debt is more and more expensive to pay back. It comes harder and harder. If you have $10,000 of credit card debt, that can grow to the equivalent of $20,000, $30,000 if you get that kind of deflation. So this has to be avoided. And the one merit, I guess, of Draghi, right, Draghi of Goldman Sachs, is that he realizes that there's a danger of deflation. And he's scared, and he wants to pump QE. He wants to go out and buy, unfortunately, the mortgage-backed securities. Now, don't do it. Don't do that. With the same money, the European Central Bank or the Fed or the Bank of Japan or even the Bank of China, Bank of Russia, use your money for 0% long-term loans to build infrastructure. They all say, demand is weak, demand is weak. Well, create some demand. The demand is contracts, shovel-ready projects, fast rail, maglev rail, new electricity grids, ports, docks, water systems, canals, locks, public buildings. The entire array of things. We have, by the way, Alan Blinder of the formerly of the Fed, right, back to Princeton, is wondering, why is it that productivity is stagnating? Well, of course, in modern U.S., the modern U.S. economy, productivity doesn't mean anything anymore, because productivity is often, how many derivatives did you eat today? That's not productivity. But the reason for it is, the reason it's down, it used to be 3% in the 60s, up through the 60s into the 70s, end of Bretton Woods. It was 3% a year productivity increase. Now it's much less because, among other things, the infrastructure is decaying. So we have long trips and lower productivity. So all of this is true. So watch out on the debt front. If you can unload debt, this is the time. Stock market is high. Debt is dangerous. Good time to lighten up on the debt. I take some profits off the stock market table and put that in there. And, of course, I don't know your individual situation, so this is a very general piece of analysis, right, based on knowledge and belief, and I can't guarantee the results. So now look, the slowdown. In Germany, the second quarter in Germany was minus 0.1%, negative growth. This quarter that's just ended, the third quarter, it's plus 0.1% growth. This is absolutely pathetic. If that's the locomotive, you're in big trouble. And indeed, we are. And Japan is the same thing. Now, you'll remember that Draghi came out and said that he wanted to start buying up. He wanted to have quantitative easing. He wanted to start buying rotten derivatives. Well, it's good that he wants to do something, but he's doing the wrong thing. Now, even worse in many ways is Jens Weidmann. Jens Weidmann, W-E-I-D-M-A-N-N. In a speech this week in Madrid, Weidmann had a barely veiled attack on Draghi. So this is the typical Bundesbank against the world, Bundesbank against Southern Europe in this case. Weidmann's line is, there are very high legal hurdles to having the European Central Bank buy, he doesn't say buy rotten derivatives. Weidmann seems to think it's okay to buy rotten derivatives. Buy as many of those as you want. But buy sovereign bonds. You shouldn't buy the government bonds of European Union countries. And that's apparently in the charter of this crazy European Central Bank. Well, this is baloney. And, you know, in an emergency, you've got to act according to paramount national interest or paramount national interests. Let me suggest my mediation of the Draghi-Weidmann dispute, right? Tarpley for Fedhead. Here I go. Tarpley for Fedhead says, what you need to do is get around this, first of all, by buying government bonds with the overwhelming emphasis being infrastructure bonds. And infrastructure bonds does not mean refinancing something that exists. It's got to be a bond which causes a construction project to start. That bond. That's a good bond. And you want collateral? You got it. You have the maglev. You have the reactor. You have the electricity grid. Whatever that project is, that's the collateral. That should shut up Weidmann and company. More broadly, obviously, it's absolutely grotesque. I mean, the European Central Bank, it looks like it's the design of a straitjacket that you impose on yourself. Suffice it to say, the U.S. Fed has the power to do open market operations, right? One thing you can do with open market operations is somebody tries to organize a speculative attack on your government bonds, you can use the superior power of a central bank to do a bear squeeze. You can smash them. You can, you know, you can reverse the market overnight and all of their long and short stuff will lose value and they'll be burned and bankrupted and then they'll go away and leave you alone. But with the European Central Bank, they built that in, right? The Eurogarchs, in their wisdom, they said, we're going to be even worse than the U.S. Federal Reserve. We will not have open market operations because that might allow the European Central Bank to buy the government bonds of these countries. Moreover, for Weidmann, I would say to him, look at German history. You're looking at 1923. You guys are always harping 1923. Hyperinflation, hyperinflation, hyperinflation. And remember that in the mind of the Austrian, 1923 is the worst. It's not the worst. 1929 gave you Hitler in 3 or 4 years. 1923 did not. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome to the final segment of our post-Thanksgiving broadcast here at World Crisis Radio. So what I urge people to do, we want to keep a drumbeat on the social media in favor of Reverend Pinckney, obviously. And you should take a look at Tarpley.net, take a look at Webster G. Tarpley Twitter feed. In addition, on the great questions of war and peace, we've got to keep up a social media presence against General Allen, the disgraced general who is now the ISIS czar. ISIS czar Allen. And he is pressing to start bombing Assad. That would be a wider war. The answer is no. That was, of course, always the inherent difficulty, is that once you started this bombing, there would be a neocon bid to redirect, to reroute the bombing. And this is it. That's what we're seeing right now. Time to defeat that attempt. So keep up the scrutiny on General Allen and his disgraced sidekick McGurk. Read the scabrous emails that he exchanged with his paramour from the from the Wall Street Journal, please. Wall Street Journal. And Michel Flournoy. The answer is no. No to Michel. Michelle Flournoy, Flournoy, and the answer is no. No to your bid to take over the Pentagon. You're a warmonger. You're from the Center for the New American Security. You're a tool of the Petraeus Allen cabal, and you mean to start bombing Assad while sparing ISIS, and actually trying to turn ISIS more against Assad. That's the hypothesis. And of course, we want to deplore Obama's extraordinary lack of judgment. On the other hand, he's prodded along by Madame 9mm and by R.J. Kappheim with his hunting rifle, ammunition, and knife. Now, what does this all lead to? Good problem for Thanksgiving weekend. The Gruber problem. We have the government a Malthusian bureaucrat by the name of Gruber, who said that the Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, had to be designed to obscure the content of the law because the voters are stupid. And, of course, Republicans who live by precisely this are now shocked. They're shocked that somebody could say this about voters. Well, how can I describe, you know, how can I decide something like this? What does a leading person in our faction say about it, right? How about Abraham Lincoln? You'll remember the famous dictum, you can fool all of the people all of the time, and some of the people, you can fool all, some of the people, now I'm in the bush, dilemma, right? You can fool all of the people some of the time and some of the people all the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. Or, in scripture, we read in Ecclesiastes, the Latin Vulgate, infinitus est numerus stultorum. And I think Cicero says something almost identical. So the Roman tradition and the Christian tradition. Ecclesiastes says the number of fools is infinite. So between Lincoln and Ecclesiastes, I think that there is a problem. Now, Gruber is not a person of goodwill, and we don't like him because he's for rationing health care, and he's PNAC, right? The MedPAC, IMAC and MedPAC. He's for these cost-cutting entities inside Medicare and in Obamacare. But now we have to talk seriously about this issue, right? There's a real issue of false consciousness. Why do people fail to follow their own enlightened self-interest? Why do people insist on voting for one of the two imperialist parties? Why don't they, as soon as there's a third party, any other choice, why don't they immediately crowd into that camp? Why don't they form a third party to somehow destabilize this duopoly and make it a little bit, less predictable? False consciousness is everywhere. And I would say one of the principal ingredients in this is cultural populism, as we warned, right? The idea that you come forward and you say, I am like you, because cultural populism and identity politics are virtually identical, and they are equally bankrupt. They say, vote for someone who shares ethnic, cultural, or other characteristics, religious characteristics that you have, or just vote for somebody who shares your obsessive prejudices. That's a Republican cultural populist or a Democratic identity politician. And the answer is that what you need is, in other words, rationality, maturity, self-government begins with a program, and that's got to be, above all, an economic program. The question to a politician is not, prove to me that you share my prejudices or my backward tendencies. We've heard it in so many different forms, right? The checked shirt, the horseshoe pit, the jelly beans on the desk, the motorcycle, the pickup truck, the various props that have been used. And it all leads to absolutely nothing except further oppression. There is, of course, there's a series of analyses. What's the matter with Kansas, right? What's the matter with Kansas? Well, the first thing the matter with Kansas is it's a plantation of the Koch brothers. But the second problem of what's the matter with Kansas is the Democratic Party fails to provide a real alternative to the legitimate insecurities and economic aspirations of the people involved. The Democratic Party seems not to have very much to offer to people in the middle class who feel threatened, right? They're in a status panic, and the Democratic Party doesn't offer it. So the Democratic Party appears to be a kind of confederation of interest groups. The Republican Party more act because it's simply the party of oligarchical privilege and its dupes on the basis of cultural populism. False consciousness is related to similar concepts of alienation. For example, what is your economic interest? What is everybody's economic interest? Well, if you look at this in the cold light of day, you'll see that there's a worldwide division of labor. You will see that your standard of living, modest though it may be, depends on a worldwide interconnected productive network. There is a world division of labor. This is a significant achievement. We have it even in late imperialism. It continues to develop, although some parts of it atrophy, and I think more atrophies than grows. There is still growth in some areas. But you essentially have a standard of living now which couldn't be done without about 5 billion people, right? If the world population is somewhat in excess of 7 billion, it looks like 5 billion, somewhere between 5 and 6 billion would be the work, depending on how this is defined. Your interest is to upgrade this worldwide division of labor, right? This world-spanning productive network. The cultural populist, and again, the most extreme is an extreme nationalist, right? The Farage or the Grillo, people like this, cultural populists. They're a form of manipulation, but it depends on alienation. The alienation that you don't understand what it is that provides your living standard. You've never been told where it all comes from, right? Stephen Colbert says food comes from the kitchen. Another kid says food comes from the supermarket. Well, no, it's got this, again, this worldwide commodity flow. So false consciousness flourishes. The political system, in particular the Republican Party, I think, is an example of self-destructive false consciousness. So we'll question open. We've mentioned alienation. There's also something called reification. There's commodity fetishism, and above all, the fetishism of money and gold, as the Paul Card tell us, right? The Paul Card. So we're wishing everybody a happy continuation of your Thanksgiving weekend, and remember those priorities.